My happiness, however, with Will, my new humble lover, did not last long, but found an end from my own imprudent neglect. After having taken even superfluous precautions against a discovery, our success in repeated meetings emboldened me to admit the barely necessary ones. About a month after our first intercourse, I was in my closet where my toilet stood in nothing but my shift, a bedgown, and underpetticoat. Will was with me, and both ever too well disposed to balk an opportunity. For my part, a warm whim, a wanton toy had just taken me, and I had challenged my man to execute it on the spot, who hesitated not to comply with my humour. I was set in the armchair, my shift and petticoat up, my thighs widespread and mounted over the arms of the chair, presenting the fairest mark to Will's drawn weapon, which he stood in act to plunge into me. When, having neglected to secure the chamber door, and that of the closet standing ajar, Mr. H. stole in upon us before either of us was aware, and saw us precisely in these convicting attitudes. I gave a great scream and dropped my petticoat. The thunderstruck lad stood trembling and pale, waiting his sentence of death. Mr. H. looked sometimes at one, sometimes at the other, with a mixture of indignation and scorn, and, without saying a word, turned upon his heel and went out. As confused as I was, I heard him very distinctly turn the key and lock the chamber door upon us, so that there was no escape but through the dining-room, where he himself was walking about with distempered strides, stamping in a great chafe, and doubtless debating what he would do with us. In the meantime, poor William was frightened out of his senses, and as much need as I had of spirits to support myself, I was obliged to employ them all to keep his a little up. The misfortune I had now brought upon him endeared him the more to me, and I could have joyfully suffered any punishment he had not shared in. I watered plentifully with my tears the face of the frightened youth, who sat, not having strength to stand, as cold and as lifeless as a statue. Presently Mr. H. comes into us again, and made us go before him into the dining-room, trembling and dreading the issue. Mr. H. sat down on a chair, whilst we stood like criminals under examination, and, beginning with me, asked me, with an even firm tone of voice, neither soft nor severe, but cruelly indifferent, what I could say for myself, for having abused him in so unworthy a manner, with his own servant too, and how he had deserved this of me. Without adding to the guilt of my infidelity that of an audacious defence of it, in the old style of a common-kept miss, my answer was in substance as follows: that I never had a single thought of wronging him, which was true, till I had seen him taking the last liberties with my servant wench, and that my resentment at that had driven me to a course that I did not pretend to justify. But that as to the young man, he was entirely faultless, for that, in the view of making him the instrument of my revenge, I had downright seduced him to what he had done, and therefore hoped, whatever he determined about me, he would distinguish between the guilty and the innocent, and that for the rest, I was entirely at his mercy. Mr. H., on hearing what I said, hung his head a little, but instantly recovering himself, he said to me, as near as I can retain, to the following purpose: "Madam, I owe shame to myself, and confess you have fairly turned the tables upon me. It is not with one of your cast of breeding and sentiments that I should enter into a discussion of the very great difference of the provocations. Be it sufficient that I allow you so much reason on your side as to have changed my resolutions in consideration of what you reproach me with. And I own, too, that your clearing that rascal there is fair and honest in you. Renew with you I cannot. The affront is too gross. I give you a week's warning to go out of these lodgings, Whatever I have given you remains to you. And as I never intend to see you more, the landlord will pay you 50 pieces on my account, with which, and every debt paid, I hope you will own I do not leave you in a worse condition than what I took you up in, or than you deserve of me. Blame yourself only that it is no better. Then, without giving me time to reply, he addressed himself to the young fellow. For you, Spark, I shall, for your father's sake, take care of you. The town is no place for such an easy fool as thou art, and tomorrow you shall set out, under the charge of one of my men, well recommended in my name, to your father, not to let you return and be spoiled here. At these words he went out, after my vainly attempting to stop him by throwing myself at his feet. He shook me off, though. He seemed greatly moved, too, and took Will away with him, who, I dare swear, thought himself very cheaply off. I was now once more adrift, and left upon my own hands, by a gentleman whom I certainly did not deserve. And all the letters, arts, friends' entreaties that I employed within the week of grace in my lodging could never win on him so much as to see me again. He had irrevocably pronounced my doom, and submission to it was my only part. Soon after, he married a lady of birth and fortune, to whom, I have heard, he proved an irreproachable husband. As for poor Will, he was immediately sent down to the country to his father, who was an easy farmer, where he was not 4 months before an innkeeper's buxom young widow, with a very good stock both in money and trade, fancied, and perhaps pre-acquainted with his secret excellencies, married him. And I am sure there was at least one good foundation for their living happily together.